Hi, everyone, and welcome to Food Disruptors, an IFT podcast that brings you the latest insights and perspectives from some of the brightest minds in the science of food. Each episode, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and science, and their role in advancing the global food system. Clean Label has been around for nearly 10 years, and while it continues to be broadly discussed within the food industry, today we're going to go beyond the market speak and explore functional ingredients and value-added nutrition, a trend seemingly spurred by the Clean Label movement and increasing demands of mindful consumers. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden, and today we're going to speak with experts from Ingredion, Innova Market Insights, and IFT about the emergence of food with purpose. We'll explore insights about what this means for different generational groups, upcoming trends, and the influence of global cultures, and how all of these factors impact future food innovation. Let's meet our guests. Joining me today are Luann Williams, co-founder and director of innovation at Innova Market Insights, Pat O'Brien, regional platform leader, Clean and Simple Ingredients, Ingredion US and Canada, and Maria Villosario, Chief Science and Technology Officer at the Institute of Food Technologists. Let's start off the conversation by talking about the concept of clean eating and really how it's grown over the last 10 or so years. Could each of you provide us with a little bit of your insight in terms of why and how we've seen this movement evolve over the last 10 years and where we see it going over the next few years? Let's start with you, Pat.
Thanks, Matt. So I think when we talk about clean eating, it's important to remember that consumers define clean eating and that the definition can be different to different consumers and that it's continuously evolving. So at the core of clean eating or clean and simple are terms like natural and free from additives. If we were to look back 10 years, right, these terms have remained atop new product launches in terms of positioning. They're recognizable by consumers and consumers are often seeking them out. Now, a lack of definition around natural has really led to questioning from consumers, lawsuits in some cases, and really an increased media attention. And I think it's led consumers to seek out a definition. And where they're seeking out definition is through third-party certifications. So examples would be non-GM project verification or USDA organic. Research has also told us these third-party certifications can drive purchase intent. And consumers are really looking for those third-party certifications on the product that they're purchasing. I think another level of this whole clean and simple would be just simple in general. So we've got looking at cleaning up labels, but also simplifying labels. And when we talk about simplifying labels, it's developing products that might have a shorter ingredient declaration, might use more recognizable ingredients. And in order to do this, we really need to provide multifunctional ingredient solutions with clean labels, which allow product developers to kind of meet that positioning around simple. At the next level, we really see plant-based and categories like alternative dairy, alternative meats, categories that are growing very significantly and rapidly. The latest stat that I saw was that near 50% of consumers have incorporated more plant-based options into their diet. Now, within the plant-based category, I see kind of the next trend or next phase as really cleaning up labels, shortening ingredient label declarations, much of what we've seen in all conventional products. And then while clean eating has traditionally been based on kind of better for me or better for the person, there's this whole kind of better for the environment play that is gaining traction pretty significantly as well. So more recently, we've seen factors like sustainably sourced, supply chain transparency, regenerative agriculture. So really a focus around environment in addition to the person's health.
Yeah, and I think, Pat, you're really painting kind of a clear picture of, although it's kind of ironic, right? We want things, consumers are looking for clean and simple labels, but actually getting those labels and products to be quote-unquote clean and simple is actually quite complex on the product development. Luann, let's move on to you. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, your insights as to why you see this movement evolving the way it is and what you might be looking for over the next few years?
Yeah, so Pat gave a great overview, but I went back and looked at our top 10 trends. And in 2008, our top trend was go natural. And what we saw between 2008 and now is that it does morph and evolve. You know, trends don't just stop at December 31st. And on January 1st, we get a new one. But what we've seen is that, as Pat mentioned, it really did start with natural. And I think if we think about that time and what happened and what drove that, we had big regulatory changes in Europe. There was some in the US as well. And then we had the big economic meltdown. And that really did create a perfect storm for, you know, where people stopped looking, they started looking for security, I think. And so, you know, simple things, simple products, old recipes, this whole kind of return to everything that was kind of natural and good. And when I was looking through the different headlines and the very top trends, we saw things like processed is out. So there was kind of a backlash against processed foods. And then we started seeing around 2010, sustainability starting to come into the picture. So it really has every year, these trends, they kind of start to morph together, but also you see a bigger umbrella kind of crossing all of it. So now we are at this kind of the stage where it's linked to not only being natural and trying to figure out what that means. And every consumer will probably have his own definition of what it means, because we also expect that we can have a very personalized, well, everything, you know, personalized entertainment, but also diet. So what it means to me might be different to someone else, but also about looking at this whole idea of how it makes me feel. So it's what I eat is good for me, but it also makes me feel good. So we really are getting kind of a convergence around, you know, plant-based comes into that, around sustainability, around fair trade. I describe it as a very messy soup right now, trying to figure out how to operate in this. And supply chain also has to catch up. And that's something that, well, we have, you know, somebody from Ingredion here that can really speak to just how difficult it is. But if there's not the ingredients, if there's not the technology, so I think what we're seeing is like kind of almost everything that could be taken out is being taken out. But then you get the complexities around things like plant-based. If you're going to make plant ingredients taste like meat, it's going to take a lot of ingredients that might not fit that definition of clean label. So then what do you do, and how does technology change? So I think we're in a super interesting period right now, where we have some extremes, you know, between extreme clean, and then you see things that are seen as very natural or simple, something like maybe plant milk, but maybe they're also ultra processed. So it's a very interesting time. I personally think this is it's a very interesting time. If I look back over the past 25 years of food science and consumer demand.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's one of those things that these trends have really created some interesting problems that food scientists and those working in the science of food can work to solve, because like you said, sometimes the consumer demands can kind of contradict each other, where they want something simple, but to get something simple or plant-based, it might not be so simple. So I think you highlighted that perfectly. Maria, let's move on to you. How do you see this concept evolving over the next few years?
This concept is still in a very dynamic stage. Luan said it very well. While clean eating is not a scientific term, essentially it is about making foods using a few ingredients, fewer ingredients, and making sure that consumers recognize those ingredients as wholesome and something that would potentially use at home. It is also about making choices for food with labels like free from, claims that give them reassurance for a variety of reasons. Some people suffer from allergies and they're looking for a reliable source of food. Others, they perceive benefits like natural or a short ingredient list. The clean eating movement, I see the clean eating movement as continuing to grow and evolving, as our need for transparency and trust will continue to spread. And this movement is going to be enabled by a variety of sources like technology and science. Now, for better or worse, the clean movement has also helped feed the general skepticism about science and food. And this skepticism plays into the fears for certain consumers who are wary of anything that sounds too sciencey. That's obviously a problem that we need to address, because we are where we are today because of science. And we will evolve and go to a better place because of science and technology. How we handle this is going to be a combination of efforts, and it will require all stakeholders to work together. Also, I think that the trend for clean label has the potential to revolutionize the way that we see innovation. We see big food innovation, small food innovation, foods that we buy from the supermarket, foods we order from food service. So we should see it as a big opportunity to actually provide not just great tasting food at the right price, but also to provide nutrition and inspire people, reassure people about the values.
And I think that this conversation that we're having right now flows really well into my next question, which is really around, you know, the what we'll call the mindful consumer movement. It really goes hand in hand with the concept of clean label. And so, you know, with consumers being increasingly mindful about, you know, the claims, Maria, that you were talking about, the free from or certain even environmental claims, one of the current phase of this movement really seems to be producing interest in foods with functional benefits. And so we're thinking about things like legume-based pastas or tea that kind of touts its cognition-boosting ability. How do we see this impacting future product development, and how will it impact the food industry as a whole, these you know, functional food type claims that we're trying to tag on to new products? Maria, let's start with you.
I see this trend as a trend with a huge potential and something that is already happening today, because it is about evolving culinary favorites for better nutrition and taste. And it is about delightful surprises in products that today are favorite habits or we use as part of our repertoire. The marriage of culinary art with food science is normal, but we're adding now other sciences. We're adding nutrition science. We're adding environmental considerations to create something that is really different and reassuring and exciting for a lot of consumers. We're bringing values to value. We're combining value and values. Also, I think that in the future, personalized nutrition will become a game changer. And this is not going to be in the not too distant future. So when you bring everything together, I think it is, we are in a soup, but things will become clearer as the drivers of innovation become clearer. And as the whole community of manufacturers and scientists and regulators will come together to actually enable some more transparency in how we operate and how we design for the future.
Yeah, I think it's really going to require an interdisciplinary effort on that part for sure. Pat, let's move on to you. How do you see that these functional food type products, how do you see that impacting future product development in the food industry?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, consumers are seeking benefits in the food and beverages, but I think in seeking those benefits, there's not a willingness to sacrifice on product quality. So I think the product has to provide a good eating experience, whether that's the taste, the texture, the flavor, whatever those attributes are that the consumer is really looking for and expecting. What we've seen around kind of the benefits, I think most consumers are seeking benefits, and oftentimes it has to do with life stages. So for instance, a baby boomer might be seeking benefits around digestive or blood sugar health. Millennials or Gen Xers, they may be looking for free from or added protein. I think energy, weight management, they kind of span across consumer groups. And the example that you gave around a legume-based pasta, I think is a really interesting one and a good one, right? So you see legume-based pasta. Typically, pasta has not been an aisle within the supermarket where consumers were going to get protein. With a legume-based pasta, there may be a protein claim that's added to the pasta. So you're seeing different consumers going to different sections of the store really as vehicles to get those benefits that they're looking for. And I mean, you use pasta as an example, but I think the same could be said for cereal or snacks. So there's a number of different products in different categories that are providing those types of solutions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've noticed this even as I've been in the grocery store myself. I'm like, oh, pasta with protein. Okay, I'll try that. And I'm wondering, Pat, if we could sidetrack for a little bit for 1 second. I'm curious if you have any insight on, or if any of the guests have any insight on, sort of the regulatory challenges associated with some of these claims. For instance, if you're making a free-from claim, typically you have to prove that what you're actually claiming is absent truly is absent in the food. So are there certain claims that are maybe more challenging from a regulatory perspective as we're looking to to market these functional benefits?
Yeah, I think it's a great call out, and regulatory is always very important. You know, we'd really have to dig into specific claims to discuss specific pieces of regulatory, but, you know, gluten-free, there's an FDA requirement around gluten-free. Protein, there's some requirements around making protein claims. So really, depending on the claim, you could dig in further, but regulatory is always a top consideration within product development.
Great, thanks. And so Luann, let's move on to you. And in terms of this current phase of the mindful consumer movement with functional foods, how are you seeing that, you know, impacting future product development in the food industry?
Well, I think Maria and Pat had great points. So I think maybe just one thing to add that's a little bit different is the whole idea of inherent nutrition. So again, I'm cheating a little bit because I went back and looked at all of our top 10 trends while the others are speaking. So we really started to talk about inherent nutrition also about 10 years ago. And that's also developing across this time, because now what we're seeing is, for example, plants are providing a lot of these benefits. So certainly if you're looking at adding, you know, protein to a pasta or having the pasta be a source of protein, that's going to come from a plant. So that's, there's huge interest, but there's also a lot of challenge in that. But now the raw material is also the source of the nutrition as well. You know, if you think about, gosh, even 15 years ago, I would say before even EFSA crackdown, like there was just a ton of fortified foods, and that was, you know, super easy. You just add the fortificants, and it is coming back. It's making a comeback, but definitely what is much bigger is the consumer interest in inherent nutrition in natural products.
And I would also like to add that there is a lot of interest in how this inherent nutrition becomes bioavailable. So the whole connection between biofortification and bioavailability is extremely important right now in science. Having a higher level of a nutrient does not always translate in making this nutrient available to the body. This is going to become an incredibly important area to bring clarity and provide guidance to how we approach the whole notion of nutrition from seed to spoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really goes back to kind of point out the interdisciplinary approach that's really needed here. You know, you need nutrition scientists, you need food scientists and engineers working on these products to make sure that, you know, if we are relying on inherent nutrition, that it's nutrition that's bioavailable, and vice versa, if we're fortifying, that the fortified nutrition is also available. And so I think this adds on nicely, this next question. So I'm curious as to how food product developers and engineers might leverage some of these value-added ingredients, maybe those with inherent nutrition. How can those be leveraged to create products based on consumer preferences? And are there demographic factors that might come into play here? Maybe, Luann, let's maybe start with you.
Looking at my cheat sheet today, it's been 10 years since stevia was approved. And I think that's a super interesting one. Earlier today, I was having a conversation with a journalist about sugar. And if you think about something like soluble fiber, you know, and all the benefits of soluble fiber, that it could be a fat replacer, it can be a sugar replacer, but it's also a source of dietary fiber. Some of them might also be prebiotic. To me, that's a perfect value-added ingredient. A lot of it comes from, you know, stevia comes from a leaf originally. Something like inulin might come from chicory root. So that's also kind of plays in, that's also a plant. It's also quite clean label. And there's definitely a lot of food developers and engineering and all kinds of things behind all that as well. So yeah, it's very complicated. And I think the other thing, just to maybe kind of touch on demographics a little bit, even if you look at, so we can break this down on a regional basis. If you think about, you know, not all consumers live in the U.S., but different countries, consumers care about different things, different age groups. The definitions of what is clean label differs across regions, differs across age groups, and so on. So it's kind of like there's every opportunity, but also maybe those opportunities are smaller. Maybe the definition of scale is changing. We know that a lot of small players and small companies have a lot of influence on this. And a lot of those people are not food scientists at all. I had someone in my office yesterday, and she said she led a 16-person product development team with 4 food scientists, and all the rest came from outside of the industry. So that's another dynamic, because maybe they bring fresh, kind of out-of-the-box thinking as well. So it makes it very complex, figuring out who's your market, how big is that market, and then how do you, you know, work the magic with all the ingredients to meet the needs of this increasingly fragmented market.
Right. And I think kind of the highlight on the demographics there, I think, is key. And I think the term fragmented is right, because there's a lot of little segments that you could be targeting based off of, you know, what ingredients you're including and what how people define clean label. I think that's a really great point. Pat, let's move on to you in terms of, you know, how are food developers and engineers leveraging these value-added ingredients to create products on consumer preferences?
Yeah, so Luann mentioned region, and I think that's a key factor. And when working with our customers and trying to work together to choose the best ingredients to go into their formulations, really to help them make their products most successful, we track two things, so acceptability and awareness. And what we've seen is that with acceptability and awareness, it can differ a great deal depending on the application area in which the product developer plays in, and also the region of the world. So I would say those are two important considerations as far as it relates to demographics, would be the region of the world, and that acceptability and awareness of specific ingredients is very different across regions of the world. And then also the applications in which they play. So we talked about the pasta example, and within pasta, certain ingredients are kind of accepted. Consumers are aware that those ingredients are contained in pasta, but maybe it's not, those same ingredients wouldn't be accepted in another application. So I think that's an important consideration to keep in mind.
Absolutely. Great points. Maria, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's important to clarify what kind of clean food we're talking about. Is it free from preservatives, free from chemicals, or is it natural and organic? These distinctions are very important for product developers because they drive different claims, different substantiation and formulation choices, and also supply chain efforts. Are we talking about reformulating existing product lines that they have significant equity and consumer loyalty, or is it about innovating? These are all very important questions, of course, in the context of demography and geography. I would like to talk a little about the regulatory environment. It's a very important environment, both within the national boundaries, but also globally, because in the future, we are going to have to nurture local ingredients and innovation and global. Global trade and global innovation is not going to go away. But the regulations right now are not the most conducive. They're not the most easy environment. And it's very important to pay attention to how we bring more alignment within regulations between different regions, and also within the regulatory framework, how can we simplify ingredient naming? For instance, if you mention that your product contains tocopherol, consumers will probably have an adverse reaction. But if you say to them it contains vitamin E, they will probably be okay with it. But tocopherol and vitamin E, they're the same ingredient. So I think we need to have the regulatory conversation, both within the naming conventions and requirements, and also how we converge across borders.
I think that's an excellent point, because we've talked about in terms of meeting the needs of consumers, even globally so far, the regulatory piece is super critical, because you have to make sure that you're actually allowed to label things a certain way and you're allowed to make certain claims associated with your product. So that's an excellent point. I want to switch gears a little bit. We've touched on this topic a few times so far, but I want to call out the plant-based segment because it is part of this clean eating movement. And really, the plant-based segment shows no sign of slowing down. We've done actually a full episode on plant-based previously. But I'm curious in terms of, you know, the role that plant-based plays with value-added nutrition, and how does the use of functional ingredients, how does that play into this segment of plant-based, and how do we see that evolving? So Pat, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I would agree, Matt. plant-based, it continues to grow. It's a hot topic kind of globally. I think it's being driven by a couple different factors. So one is kind of perception around health. I think there's perception around whether it be sustainability or animal welfare. So I think plant-based will continue to grow. It's an area that Ingredion has significantly invested in recently. And we've been playing in the space for quite some time and really developing formulation expertise, but it's an area that we're investing even more in kind of moving forward. And then the trend continues to grow. I think you're going to see plant-based being incorporated into kind of new categories. You're also going to see trends, as I kind of mentioned during my intro, that we've seen within more traditional foods taking place as well. So I think with different ingredients being used, ingredient declarations. So I think it's an area where both of these kind of trends will be in hand, but plant-based, I believe, will continue to grow and grow rapidly.
I agree. Luann, what are your thoughts on this nexus of functional ingredients and plant-based foods?
Well, I think one thing is plant-based has hardly even started yet, because I think we're even still just trying to figure out the terms. So we did some consumer research and we asked consumers like which phrases do they find healthier, for example. So consumers find plant-based healthier than vegan and vegetarian, but we still are talking a lot about vegan and vegetarian foods. So I think we're still figuring out the terminology. I even bought plant-powered deodorant 2 weeks ago. I mean, like, who would have thought? So trying to figure out what we're going to call this and what consumers are learning about it and what cues they see. So that's definitely one thing. But I think, again, when I talked earlier about some of the segments are what we could call ultra processed. If you think about something like almond milk, well, or soy milk or any of the plant milks, well, if there's no calcium in there, but consumers expect it to have calcium, I think that's an example of a plant-based product that you're going to have to add a fortificants to even add the nutrition that's in the non-alternative product to make it comparable. So I think that's one aspect. I think you also have to think about even the definition of a plant. So a plant is, well, it's obviously, well, we know fruits and vegetables. We know consumers are eating more of those as a way to get healthier. But if you think about nuts are a plant, so there's a lot of inherent nutrition in nuts. Spices and herbs are plants. Well, that can also be a source of nutrition. If we think about botanicals, you know, so we are, you know, the flavor industry is investing heavily in botanicals. That's also a plant. So I think it really comes down to the application and what do consumers expect from it and what is being taken out of because, you know, or that doesn't exist because it is a plant. And then what can I add back with a plant? And then what other kind of functional ingredients do I have to add? So I think it's just so complex. You have to just think about what is the application, what is the region, and what does that consumer group, you know, because Gen Z thinks very differently about this than boomers do. So it's endlessly complex, but very interesting at the same time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of that, your example of the nut-based milk, you know, needing to add calcium to it because typically people expect calcium in milk is a perfect sort of example and one that's used a lot in terms of, you know, how can we meet the consumers with products that they expect using the ingredients that they expect to be in that product. So I think that's an excellent point. Maria, what are your thoughts on this intersection?
Yeah, very much in line with Pat and Luann. This whole movement, because it is a movement, will continue to grow. It is stretching our definitions and actually the conventional ways that we have been innovating in the past and the ways that we have been investing in the whole value chain. There is going to be more demand for plant incorporation as flexitarianism continues to grow. So scalability and adaptability of these ingredients are going to become very critical. This is actually a fantastic time for product developers and food scientists and technologists because they will have to work with new ingredients to use them in new formats, in new applications, or to use them as substitutes in foods that today we have been formulated with ingredients we've known and felt comfortable for many, many years. So this is really, it's a challenging time, but it's also exciting time at the same time. I think it's important for us to learn from other countries. We see plant-based nutrition as something novel it is novel to us, but it is not novel to other countries. There are countries that they are almost, and cultures that they are almost exclusively vegetarian. What can we learn from them, and what can we adapt to creating products that are more wholesome and more appealing to consumers? You know, products don't have to be, some products based on plant will have to be heavily engineered, but not all product innovations have to be heavily engineered. So I see this as an area of incredible opportunity and excitement for people involved with food innovation.
Yeah, I totally agree. It really is an exciting time to be in the food industry, because we're getting a whole new set of challenges to tackle. So I'm curious, my next question is simple, but I think it might be a little bit more complex in the answers. But what does it take to convince consumers to adopt value-added products? Luann, let's start with you.
Well, it could be really difficult and say, okay, let's define value-added products, but let's focus instead on the convince consumers part, because I honestly don't think you can convince consumers of anything anymore. You know, the days when you had to do a lot of consumer education and it would just be somebody, you know, through television advertising or your doctor or your teacher telling you about something. Now it really is, it's easier in some ways and it's harder in some ways because you have to catch their attention. So I think it's really more about consumers are going to go learn about something themselves, or it's going to be brought to them by social media or somebody they trust. But I'm amazed, like almost stunned, when I see some of the things that my teenage kids educate me about. You know, if we go to the grocery store and there's a particular piece of chicken, a cut of chicken that I really like if I'm in a hurry, because they cut off that little flap under the breast, but it only comes on a 1-star chicken meat. And so I know it's going to start a fight every time I buy it, because my kids know that piece of chicken only has 1 star, not 3 stars. And then they can explain all the reasons behind it, you know, but I think that it's the time that we're living in. And then if I look at my parents who are in their 80s, they're influenced. They grew up on farms, so they've always eaten very clean and natural. But now they're influenced by chefs. They're influenced by what they see on TV sometimes, on some of these cooking shows. And then otherwise, they just go on the internet themselves, you know, and they look it up. So I think the day of convincing consumers is probably over, but how do you make sure that consumers have the information they need to make the proper choice? And Pat mentioned things like GMO earlier. You know, there's a huge online debate around those kinds of things. So I think the number one topic on Instagram is food. And definitely you can always find somebody to discuss, debate. And I've subscribed to some of these groups, you know, on the side that I agree with, but also the side that I don't agree with, just to see the kind of things that people are talking about. I think it's really consumer driven now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of points to the fact that really around food, it's more of a conversation now than kind of classical one-way marketing almost. So I think that's a really good call out. Pat, what do you think it takes to convince consumers to adopt value-added products?
Yeah, so Luann was spot on with her answer. I'm not sure that there's convincing that needs to be done. I think consumers have made up their mind on what they want, right? So we know that over 80% of consumers want shorter ingredient declarations. Over 80% of consumers want to recognize the ingredients going into their food products. I think the challenge that exists, or the opportunity really, is to one, develop products that are going to provide an enjoyable eating experience, but then also use the packaging and the communication, whether that's on package or through social media or whatever it may be, to really communicate the right information that consumers are looking for, right? So using the claims, making sure the claims are backed up with the ingredients that are going into the formulation, and then doing a good job of communicating so that consumers are aware of the product and really the story around your product. So I think that's really where the opportunity lies.
Maria, what are your thoughts?
I agree. This is not going to be one approach. We need to have our ear on the ground to the conversations that are taking place in so many different forums and so many different channels and media, but also it's important to look for the big trends. I think climate is going to very quickly change the tone of the conversation and the urgency. for a number of things that need to change in the way we produce and the way we consume and dispose of food. So I think this balance of value and values to people and consumers is going to be very important. And I was wondering, I'm wondering if there are lessons from the recent history that we can learn. What can we learn from the growth of the organic movement back in the 70s? What can we learn from the growth of the farmers markets in this country? Can we take those learnings and try to adapt them for the phenomenon that we're seeing today with fragmentation and not telling the consumers how to make their choices and how to live their lives, but actually reacting, responding to the signals that they give us?
I think that's great. And you keep calling out, you know, these other places where we can maybe learn some additional information. And I think that's just something, a great point to call out, is that some of these trends are already part of cultures, or that we've seen certain, you know, at least cycles of trends kind of already come through that might be similar. So what can we learn from our past, or what from other cultures are doing, and look outside our own box to be successful here? And so I think this flows really well into my next question. This is specific really to the American market, but you know, we've talked a lot about and previously about the influences that we have on the internet and global media that are influencing our markets and even demographics. But American consumers are increasingly open to new ingredients and diverse flavors. Are there any global influences we can expect for functional ingredients and value-added ingredients? Pat, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I think it's another great question. And because of social media and different outlets, I think it's really increased consumers' awareness of different options that are out there. So, I mean, if you were to look at like the frozen meal category, for instance, you see very ethnic influences in a number of the products that are doing well there. In kind of the savory category, you see ramen growing quite a bit. So I think that that's in kind of consumer packaged goods, but the same can be said for ingredients. And I would expect to see more and more ingredients, those types of influences. Just kind of thinking off the top of my head, turmeric is one where you're seeing appear more and more in ingredients, or more and more in food products as an ingredient. It's been around for a long time, but I think people understanding the benefits of that product. So that's just one that comes to the top of my mind.
Well, that's interesting, because turmeric really has been used as like a dietary supplement in the past. And now it seems like maybe it's being more and more incorporated into, you know, like a whole food as an ingredient. Maria, what are your thoughts on American consumers' openness to functional ingredients and value-added ingredients?
I think the openness is there, and we will continue to see a plethora of flavors and varieties that are coming from overseas. It's interesting to me that certain foods stick, like pizza and like sushi, whereas it takes a bit longer for other ingredients to come in. But actually, if you compare today, a breakfast offerings of today and breakfast offerings of 25 years ago, We've clearly shifted from where we were. So this will continue. But I also think that with all this abundance of information and new and exciting trends, I think American consumers will embrace new paradigms like microalgae in their diet. How this will happen to scale remains to be seen. But I think the time is here, and I think we are ready to see more of these innovative ingredients coming into the mainstream. I think another factor to watch out for is where people buy their food today. This year, for the first time, consumer spend on food bought from outside, not through traditional retailers, has surpassed food that we buy in supermarkets. So today, this year, American consumers spend 51% on food that they bought from outside. So the dynamics, what's happening, I would call it the food service arena, I think we need to pay attention to what's happening there, because it's going to be a significant source of influence for consumer choices and frequency of those of these purchases.
Luann, what are your thoughts?
So I'm going to give you a little sneak peek into our top 10 trends for 2020 while we talk about this. So
excellent.
Trend number 8 is A Star is Born, and it's all about new ingredients and mainstreaming unusual ingredients. So Pat stole my thunder, but turmeric is definitely one of those that has high acceptance and high interest. So I'd say that one's kind of established, but I think even if you go back, Maria's right that sometimes you have to look backwards and see what you learn from the past. I think that, well, we had pomegranate, which really launched the whole superfoods. And then right after that, it's when acai got launched. I think I heard about that for the first time in about 2003, that Danone had used it in a product. And that came from Brazil. So if you think about things like guarana, even collagen, I think collagen is one of those value-added proteins that, you know, it's been in Asian markets for highly successful and Asian markets for a long time. And now you're finally starting to see it kind of take off in Europe and in the US as well. So that's definitely one of those functional value-added protein ingredients. So I think there's a lot of things. And also things like, again, thinking back to plant-based, also botanicals, we have an example. It's one of the products like Waku, and it's a tea made from 20 super herbs and aromatic flowers sourced from the Andes Mountains in Ecuador. And that really leads us to our top trend, which is storytelling, that everybody wants to know the story behind what they're eating. If it's about where the ingredients are from, if it's to understand the product's benefits, it makes me trust the brand. These are things consumers tell us about that. And I think you're going to see a lot more products also made with locally sourced ingredients in different countries around the world. Again, Danone in Mexico have now made a product which is sourced in Mexico. So I think it kind of goes both ways. But I think Americans are very, I kind of joke to my family that Americans are becoming Europeans. You know, Americans started drinking sparkling water in a huge way. And then the American twist is to spike it. You know, so we're now seeing this huge explosion in hard seltzer, which just took off this summer. So I think Americans are open to anything. I think 25 years ago, Nancy Childs told me that Americans didn't want to talk about bugs, you know, and so probiotics were really a no-go place. Well, just look now, you know, the probiotics has exploded. So Americans are very open to really just about anything. But again, it's about the story behind it. And does it have a benefit? Is it interesting? Is it, you know, does it make you feel good? Is it good for you? So I think there's very little that Americans would not be interested in. But like Pat said, it has to taste good and have a benefit.
Excellent. And Pat, I know Ingredion has also done some considerable amount of research on the concept of clean eating and how its fast-growing adoption has accelerated changes in the marketplace. Could you share some of the findings that you've gathered on this topic? Especially interested to hear how it has impacted your product development at Ingredion.
Yeah, absolutely. So we call our research Atlas, and we've been running the same research for about 10 years. And really what we try to track within our research, and I alluded to it in some of my earlier comments, but is acceptability and awareness of ingredients. So we track the acceptability and awareness within different application areas and then within different regions of the world. So we've covered 37 different countries across the world, interviewed 30,000 consumers, and really we try to dig into the ingredients, the claims that those ingredients allow for, and then just really understanding the acceptability and awareness. And then what we try to do is we use that research both to direct our ingredient development, also help our customers choose the right ingredients. So we'll combine those insights with our product portfolio, and then our experience in clean label formulation. So we've been kind of formulating within the clean label space for over 25 years. And 25 years ago is really when we launched our Novation family of products, which were clean label starches, allowing for a number of those kind of claims that we had discussed earlier. So we try to bring together that full package so that we can help our customers understand the ingredients that consumer research has told us will be successful. And then provide them with the functionality that they need with the broad product portfolio. and then the formulation to support through our technical experts who've got a breadth of experience in formulating clean labels. So an example of how we've used this research, so we've launched over the past several years a line of multifunctional flours. And really the research was showing us that in specific applications, flour was preferred over other texturizers, and that bases like rice and tapioca were being preferred over other bases. So we were able to use a unique crop and then put a physical processing, I'll call it, so no chemicals involved or anything like that, to provide functionality with a flour label that our customers could use in order to create kind of these clean and simple labels. So that's just kind of one quick example, but that's the approach we take as far as our clean and simple platform is concerned.
That's awesome. So, I mean, it really shows that, you know, doing your homework and doing some background research on not only the consumer preferences, but also the ingredient functionality in the actual food is kind of key to success here.
Exactly.
And so I want to ask each of you, we touched on this a little bit in the beginning in terms of where this movement is going, but I want to see if we can reach, you know, further into the future as far as we can. Where do we see this going over the next, you know, 5 or more years? Maria, let's start with you.
I think there is going to be a significant increase in awareness coming from transparency. There is high demand for transparency, and traceability is going to be the vehicle to provide access to information that we have not seen before. It's going to be very interesting to see the consumer response to all this information. There is an insatiable appetite for information, but it remains to be seen what consumers will choose to use and how they will use this information. I think for me, transparency as a building block for trust is an important trend that we need to watch out for. And every innovation, be it at an ingredient level or the process level and formulation level, I think it is going to be exposed to this transparency. It's a dynamic that we have not seen before, and it's something that we need to watch out for.
I think that's a really, really good point. Pat, where do you see this going over the next 5 years?
So I completely agree with Maria around the transparency piece. Kind of throughout our discussion today, we talked about a lot of factors that are driving clean label. And I think if you were to find a common theme among all those factors, it probably would be transparency. So I think that's going to continue to be a key driver. I think the other thing that, is a definite is that it's going to continue to evolve. So consumers, their definition, their preference, their acceptability, their awareness, it's going to continue to evolve. So it's important that we stay close to the consumers, understand what consumers' perception of certain things is, so that we can make the best decision and deliver products that are going to meet their needs. So transparency, the other piece that I think is really big is this better for the environment. So I think now, more so than ever, we see environmental considerations being made when people are purchasing products. And I think that's going to continue to grow as well. So I'd say those three factors, the transparency, really the whole environmental factors, and kind of the trust is really what's going to drive things in the future, and that it will continue to change.
Luann, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think climate change and sustainability were going to be my answers for things that are going to be the real game changer here. But that Maria is exactly right. Those also both tie in with transparency and also trust. So for sure, that'll be the next big, you know, trends kind of layer up as you go through the years. And I think definitely the next layer for this will be that.
Great. And I also want to touch, especially given who listens to our podcast, what can those working in R&D, packaging, food innovation, be thinking about now to anticipate what is coming next and how they can be successful in their work as with regards to clean label specifically. Luann, let's start with you.
I think I would look at everything I'm making or I'm working on and just say, can I make it better? Because I think some of this is not about perfection. It's not about kind of you know, some kind of magic bullet, but I think it's about incremental improvements over time. So I think I would really just challenge and question everything that I'm working on to think, you know, is it a package? Is it plastic? Could it be something else? You know, could it be affordable if it was something else? And I love Pat's examples of the flowers, because that's a perfect example of you know, just trying to figure out what do consumers want. But I do think it's all about just that, do that little bit better every time you look at it. And also make sure that you scour the world for new ideas. And I think I said it earlier that if you think about all these little companies that just seem to have, you know, kind of come out of nowhere over the past 5 years, they're, you know, disruption always comes from outside of an industry and people thinking about it in a different way and not just thinking, well, this is how it's always been or this is what we've always used. But I would just challenge my thinking and challenge my colleagues' thinkings and my company's thinking to try to figure out how do we do this in a different way? Because if you don't think of it, somebody else will think of it for you.
Maria, what are your thoughts?
I totally agree. There is so much value in small incremental steps that we take every day. And how we frame our actions. When we drive productivity programs to improve the bottom line, this is something that, you know, we bring value to the company. But at the same time, a lot of productivity programs, they reduce waste. They improve ways we do things. They increase efficiencies. And we don't often talk enough about all the other benefits. I think we need to reframe the conversation and rewire the way that we approach problems to solve. I also think that there's an opportunity for scientists and product developers to expand the framework of traditional product development. Typically, you would start with a concept and then you will prove your product when the product fulfills against the concept and then you scale up. But I think it's important during these times of change to go beyond. Luan talked about storytelling. We need to go beyond before the concept. We need to go back to the values and the story we want to tell. This is going to make a better concept. The better concept will drive a better product. And when you combine this with the technology capabilities, like transparency, like artificial intelligence, we have an opportunity to really create better products for the consumers, for the environment, for the companies, and also to do it faster so that we're keeping up and we are satisfying needs in near time. I know the food industry is a slower industry, but there is opportunity to do things faster. So I think the opportunity is there, and you know, we have to seize it.
I love the idea of kind of shifting our thinking about how we develop products and really where we start with that process. That's a really great point. Pat, you want to close us out on this one and give your thoughts in terms of what people in research and development, packaging and food innovation can be thinking about now to anticipate the next steps in this area?
Sure, and my comments will really echo Luann and Maria's, but I would start off by saying that clean label is complex. There's going to be challenges to it, and it's going to continue to evolve. I think as food formulators, it's important that we understand that consumers are defining clean label, so we've got to stay close to consumers, and there's good tools out there that can help us make good decisions around addressing the needs for consumers in the forms of research and things. I think it's also important that ingredients are helping to drive some purchase decision. And so we talk a lot about ingredient stories. So if there's not awareness around ingredients, there's opportunity for education around ingredients. And then I would also just say, you know, that things are it's there's not a one kind of piece solution. So acceptability and awareness differs within applications, as I mentioned, and also regions of the world. And then last, I think it's just keeping focused on creating a high quality product. So making sure that taste, texture, product quality, flavor, all meet expectations or exceed expectations for consumers.
Well, thank you all for your time and for all of your insight. And thanks to our listeners. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists on Facebook and LinkedIn. For more on Clean Label, be sure to visit our website at ift.org and type in Clean Label in the search box to gain access to a ton of Clean Label resources. Thanks for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.